Good evening. Welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. We are about a little more than 24 hours away from the Senior Bowl, and there's a lot to discuss within that game and as far as recent news regarding the Las Vegas Raiders. To discuss that, we have our guy, Ryan Holmes. Here. Good evening, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, man, anytime. Now, the Senior Bowl, what was your first takeaway from the game itself?
I think the first takeaway is how some of the lower-level guys played in this game, considering they didn't get a lot of snaps this year. Some of these guys came out of programs that they played one game or no games. And to show up and compete on the same field as guys who played a full season, like in the SEC or even Alabama, who played in the championship game, like the left tackle that out of North Dakota State, Dylan Redness, I believe is his name, came out, and he was one of the best offensive linemen there. The competition jump wasn't too big for some of these guys. They held their own. I thought the depth showed at certain positions. Running back, those guys seemed to have some good days. Deep again at receiver. So just good to see the overall depth and the quality of play, considering the background. All these guys came from different places on different schedules all season.
One of the guys I saw was Quinn Miners from Wisconsin Whitewater. For those who don't know, I live in Wisconsin, and Wisconsin Whitewater is pretty much the Alabama / Ohio State / Clemson of Division III. They have a dominant program. They've won championships with three different coaches in pretty much the last decade plus. They have been the sterling example of football excellence in Division III. And Miners was a guy, like I said, just like you had mentioned, he wasn't how he thought of or regarded, and he's out here dishing out pancakes to everyone who wants some. And he improved his draft stock a great deal. And if I'm the Raiders, I know that Rodney Hudson is going to possibly end up in the Hall of Fame. I also know that Gabe Jackson is very expensive at $9 million. I'm not saying that Miners can just step in and take his job, but maybe spending a day three pick on Miners and seeing how he develops on as an interior lineman over the last couple of years could be a thought. What were your thoughts on Miners?
Yeah, he showed out well. He played some center. From what I understand, he didn't play center at Wisconsin Whitewater, and when he got to the senior bowl, they asked him to, and he jumped in and did it, and he held his own against some of the best interior linemen. He played some guards, so there's some versatility. Center guard, right guard, left guard. I want to say he played his way into the third round. I think he'd be a good value in the fourth round if he got there for the Raiders to add another piece on the interior. Like you said, Hudson's getting up there in age. We don't know long-term what Gabe Jackson's going to be. We don't know if he's going to be on the team a month from now or a year from now when his contract's up. And then obviously you have the question marks at left guard. So he'd be a good guy to add on the interior. I don't know if he can step in and play year one, week one. I don't see him as a starter, but a tough guy. He fought to play in the game with a broken hand. He had the nickname The Gut. He was walking around with his belly hanging out the whole time, so I thought that was interesting. But, you know, just Gruden grinder type. He just showed up and balled out for a guy that on tape, I haven't seen his tape from Wisconsin Whitewater. Everything that I've seen online was – it wasn't dominant that you would expect for a guy, and he was blocking guys that were 220, 230 pounds on the interior, but he made a lot of money at the Senior Bowl with the way that he showed out, and I think he got the award for the best lineman of the week for the team he was on.
Another guy that played well was Demetric Felton from UCLA. He's like a running back / wide receiver, and experts have kind of said, and I kind of buy into the fact that he is what the Raiders could envision Lynn Bowden Jr. being, but didn't pan out in their eyes. How important do you think it is to renovate the running back room behind Josh Jacobs?
It's very important. They need a third down back, a guy that's elusive, that can run some routes as well. How is he going to hold up in pass blocking as a third down back? I don't know, but that's something you can work on. He kind of fits, and we've talked about the Nyheim Hines type of guy they need on this backfield. A guy that's a good receiver out of the backfield. He's quick. He can get open. He's a threat to go the distance. He obviously lined up in the slot and ran some great routes this week at Senior Bowl practices. I saw little of him this year at UCLA, just being in L.A., watching him on TV. But no, he's definitely a guy, and he gets in and out of his cuts very quickly. He's got good body control, good acceleration. I'd be curious to see what he runs on his pro day. I'm guessing he's somewhere in the high 4.3s, low 4.4s. And to me, he's not Tyreek Hill, but Tyreek Hill was a running back in college too. So he's kind of that wild card in this draft. He might turn into a really good wide receiver. He might be a really good third down back. He could be a good slot receiver. He's someone that I think is a fit third, fourth round. And I'm not going to reach for him in the first or second round, but he'd be a guy that you could add to the running back room and take that spot that they thought Lynn Bowden was going to do last year.
When I look further at the standouts, Obi Melifonwu's brother, I'm about to butcher his name, but Ifeiti Melifonwu from Syracuse, he's a bigger cornerback. Now, the fan base is going to say, you know, look at the guy's brother and look, you know, see how he pans out, but that's not really fair to the younger Melifonwu. But what do you think that the Raiders need as far as, should they go for longer, bigger corners to play in Gus Bradley's defense?
Eventually, in the long run, I think they should. I think they're okay with Mullen, Arnett, and Johnson kind of fitting those molds and then bring in a veteran. I've seen some people talk about Melifonwu moving to free safety, where he's a bigger guy with some range, where he could play better there. So some teams probably have him as an outside corner. Some probably have him as a free safety. I don't know how much safety he's played in college. I bet against Mike Mayock doing a lot of these position changes. As he mentioned, that was kind of something that got him off the rails last year. A guy that I really liked going into the game and really solidified himself at the safety spot was Richie Grant out of UCF. I think he had multiple interceptions during the week, showed very good range. He could play in the box. He showed really well in the one-on-one reps against wide receivers, so he's a free safety. He could drop down and cover the slot in certain packages when you had Abram beat, but I'd be really interested in a guy like Richie Grant in the second round. I think he's clearly played as well into the top 50 picks of the draft.
I agree. I think that his ability not just to play with range, but actually play with ball skills enough that if he's near the ball, he's going to try to pick it, and he's going to actually, you know, secure the interception. That's what the Raiders have liked. It just, the lack of playmaking safeties is just, for this team with this history, is just, this might be one of the longest drops they've had as far as the complete lack of depth as in the back end. One of the guys that I thought that would have a decent week but actually end up having an all-time bad week was Jamie Newman, quarterback out of Georgia, formerly out of Wake Forest. Newman was a toolsy guy that I thought that the Raiders could look at later in day three and just kind of develop. I'd rather have Nathan Peterman at this point, and I never thought I'd say that out loud. Newman just... If you opt out a year, which is fine, it's your choice, but if you opt out as a quarterback, that means you should be spending your entire year getting up to speed. He just looking through progressions was slower. His just release was all over the place. Just slot, arm slot, just it didn't seem right as far as someone who's had ample time to prep for this game. When you look at this game and you look at the special extenuating circumstances revolving COVID and how truncated the schedule was, when a player doesn't perform well, does that speak more to you as a scout, or does this more of like anyone have a bad game?
It's more along the line of the guys that opted out, like Newman, that came and didn't perform this week. That raises a lot of flag, I would think, across the NFL and draft room. So now they have to go back to the 2019 tape and kind of break it down. If a guy played all season and had a bad week, at least they have a year's worth of tape or 2 years worth of tape to go back and see. And obviously the tape's going to outweigh 1 week of performance, but I think it was critical for guys like Newman, and they just didn't show up. And Newman's always been good at throwing the deep ball. It's always been the accuracy underneath, intermediate, short route. And that showed up again here as being issues at the Senior Bowl. Now, he didn't have timing with these receivers. These are new receivers he's working with, but it definitely raises a lot of flags. And I think that the way he played kind of puts him more, instead of second, third round, we're probably talking more fifth, sixth round, developmental, late round guy. I don't think he's a fit for the Raiders in a West Coast-based system where it's about decision-making and accuracy underneath. So I don't see him as a fit with the Raiders.
And I look more and more. There was a guy named Quincy Roach, formerly out of Temple, but later Miami, where if the Raiders went to a 3-4, it'd be perfect. He would be a perfect outside linebacker in a 3-4, even in a 4-3. He's not a defensive end by a slot, by a damn sight, because of his pronounced lack of strength. He might be the stand-up type of rusher in a sub-package, but he's not really a guy that you can, you know, hold your hat or hang your hat on. But if we shift to the concept of the other news of this week, which had people buzzing,
I'd actually like, can I say something real quick on Roche?
Go ahead.
Roche is exactly what Gus Bradley is looking for in a Leo. So I would definitely circle that name. He's a guy that can play the Leo position in a 4-3 under front and be that wide rusher. He's got the perfect body type for it. He has the pass rush skills for it. He's going to have to figure out how to hold up in the run game, but he's only going to be responsible for the C-gap in this defense. So he's a guy, if the Raiders took a shot at an edge rusher and, you know, let's say they traded down and got an additional second-round pick or used their third-round pick, I could see him very easily in a Raiders uniform after the draft.
Now, we had talked off air before about the Leo and, you know, the you said that when Gus Bradley got to Seattle, was it Chris Clemons first?
It was, yes.
And then it became Bruce Irvin. Somebody like
Bruce Irvin played Sam, and then he went down to the Leo in passing situations, and he actually was a full-time Leo the year after Bradley went to Jacksonville.
Gotcha. Now, shifting to the other news, and I'm not sure if it was news, but it was kind of gives a peek behind the curtain about the dysfunction of this franchise. Vic Tafer from The Athletic wrote an article about Nelson Agholor having strenuous objections to the team's collapsing versus Miami. This is what Vic wrote. Agholor, according to those in the room, said his teammates were selfish and didn't work hard enough, and that they had to quit against the Dolphins as well as in the previous two losses. He said there was no accountability in the locker room, and on winning teams, players play for one another and coaches. The Raiders' performance over the previous six games was unacceptable, and too many people within the team were just flat out accepting it. Agholor told his teammates they sucked. There's a lot there. I'm going to go with the fact first of the folks that tried to counter Vic's article, and you have people like Keyshawn Nixon and Daryl Worley, who was there for like two games before he was on the COVID list. So they don't really have that point of reference. I really didn't hear anything from the quarterback, but we're going to get to him. John Gruden said when he was asked to respond was he loves Agholor, which that was his only response to all of that, saying one of your players calls out your entire team for mailing it in again, and he just says he loves the guy. What was your response to reading these words from Nelson Agholor?
I was surprised it came from him. He's a guy that's been on the team for less than a year. He's on a veteran minimum deal, basically. And the fact that he has to stand up in that room and be the leader of that team and basically let everyone know. It was an emotional situation. They basically had realized at that point they were knocked out of the playoffs. They had to win that game. And to have Nelson Agholor be the guy that has to stand up and be the adult in the room and try to hold everyone accountable, to me, questions the leadership on this team. And that's been an issue that I've had with this team for the last 5 or 6 years. You have some silent leader types, we'll call them, and Derek Carr clearly falls into that. Rodney Hudson clearly falls into that. Some of the elder statesmen on this team you would think would stand up in front of the room and try to take some accountability and let the teammates know what's going wrong. And you would hope that would have happened after the Kansas City game when they were 6-4. Why does it take till week 16 or 17 before someone stands up and addresses that? And we don't know if that happened after some previous games, but you've seen it both ways. Max Crosby came out and said it did happen. And as you mentioned, Daryl Worley, Rico Gafford, a couple other guys said Dallin Leavitt, I believe, all said it didn't happen that way. So there's still some discord going on in that locker room where some guys are seeing it, some aren't. But it's not just that. You take the totality of everything. Alec Ingold, I believe, earlier this year after a game, basically said similar comments to the media. The guys just need to work harder, and they're not showing up every day. I don't remember his exact quotes, but he said something similar. So you've heard bits and pieces in the past, but for me, I think a lot of this should fall on John Gruden, but Derek Carr doesn't get a pass in this either. He should be the face of this franchise. He is technically the face of this franchise as the quote-unquote franchise quarterback. It's year seven. He wants the whole Mamba mentality. He's wearing the sleeve in honor of Kobe or whatever for this season. But where is he in all this? Why have we not heard from Derek Carr? Why has he not come out after the fact and said anything? He's basically gone completely silent on this. And as the leader of the team, that's his locker room. And clearly, he's not showing that type A personality leadership that you want out of that guy. I don't know if he wants everyone to be his friends and he wants to be liked by everybody. We know how sensitive he is on social media. But at some point, he has to get a hold of that locker room and lead those men. And he's just, to me, he's not doing that.
When I look at Carr, and you mentioned being in year seven, and this man gets a pass that very few sub-500 quarterbacks will ever get. He gets a pass year in, year out. First, it was he didn't have weapons. Then he didn't have a system. Then he didn't have a defense. It just, the excuse is made for him. And I think that, honestly, if we keep it completely honest, it infantilizes him. It gives him these outs that no one else gets. And no one else, you know, wants to... grab. People are quick to throw Carr's gaudy numbers at you and say, well, he's the most accomplished statistical passer in Raiders history, isn't it? Rich Gannon wouldn't have just sat there. I guarantee you it wouldn't have happened. Jim Plunkett wouldn't have sat there. Guys, in people, it's weird. People love Carr and they want to tie him to the illustrious past of the Raiders, but his predecessors wouldn't have just sat there and just let a wide receiver on a one-year deal stand in front of teams and say, hey, all y'all suck, and just sit there year after year after year. And if I'm honest, one of the gripes I will always have with Reggie McKenzie is this: why did you pay Derek Carr before you paid Khalil Mack?
Why did he pay Gabe Jackson before he played Khalil Mack?
Yep.
That's another question.
If McKenzie doesn't do that, Khalil Mack's still a Raider. And this team is in a lot better shape. Don't get me wrong, I like Gabe Jackson, but Gabe Jackson should not have seen a check before possibly one of the better generational pass rushers this team has seen in this century. And getting back to Carr, it's, why do you think that John Gruden just gives this guy this big of a pass?
That's a good question. Now, I'm going to say this. I know Carr doesn't have a defense, but I look at it this way. Carr's not the problem, but to me, I don't think he's the answer either. Both can be right. So, I mean, look at what the Rams just did. Jared Goff took him to a Super Bowl 2 years ago, and Sean McVay just shipped him out of town along with 2 first-round picks from Matthew Stafford. He's arguably better than Goff. I would argue he's better than Carr, but it's going to be tough. Obviously, they need to upgrade the position, but I think Carr has solidified himself as somewhere in that 10 to 15 range. I'm not putting him in the top 10 in the league based on some random one stat that says he was 9th or 10th in the league in one passer stat. But I don't know. I think Gruden's going to want a veteran guy. Obviously, he's had Carr for 3 years. They've built around him. I think this was the year, if they didn't make the playoffs, he probably wouldn't be back. But then we had COVID. You had the issues on the offensive line. You clearly had the issues on defense. So I think he got a pass this year. I honestly think it's make or break next year. If they don't make the playoffs in 2021, I think that they could have a change at quarterback. And they may bring in someone behind him this year to kind of groom for a year, whether that's another cheap veteran or if it's a rookie. Me personally, I would not extend. We've heard a conversation about extending Derek Carr's contract. I say, why? You have him under contract for 2 more years where you can move him at any time. Why would you lock yourself into a longer contract at this point, move him into his mid to late or mid 30s, add guaranteed money? So where he's basically, you don't have a choice if you extend him now over the next two or three years unless you want to take a massive cap hitch. I don't think the Raiders are in position to do that. So I expect him to be back one more year and make or break. I think John Gruden likes a lot of what he does. The biggest thing I think Gruden likes is his ability to get the ball where Gruden wants him to get it to. So it's kind of like he's the quarterback on the field. Like, hey, this play is designed to throw this route against this coverage. And Carr can do that pretty effectively. But it's when that route's not there and then he has to improvise, or if the rush is coming and he has to find an escape lane, or if he has to run, or he has to make a play on the move. Like, he's not good at any of that. Like, but he can play within the structure of the offense that Gruden wants. I hope next year they do a little bit more bootlegs. I'd like to see him, you know, take some bootlegs off that outside zone, use the athleticism a little bit more, get him on the move. I'd like to see a bigger body receiver in this receiving core where they can throw some slants, because Carr's pretty good at throwing slants. They didn't have that body type other than Waller. They couldn't throw slants to any of the other three guys, whether it's Renfro, Aguilar, or Ruggs. They couldn't throw the fade route, which Carr is pretty good at throwing out when he has trust in the wide receiver. So I think they're going to try to get a bigger body wide receiver at some point to be able to throw some of these routes and different concepts. But it's got to be hard for Gruden, too, because he's looking at it and he's like, if we move on from Carr and we can't get an upgrade, like, he clearly doesn't want to start a rookie. Mm. So it's what upgrade can you get out there? And I don't think the Raiders are in a position to be giving away first-round picks in a trade with Carr. Unless you're getting a Deshaun Watson back, you should just roll with Carr for one more year. But the excuses have to stop. If they don't, it's going to be year eight. If they don't make the playoffs next year, I don't care what the excuses are. They need to move on. And you've seen the tweets, Josh Dubow, the noted Raider hater. There's only, I think, four or five quarterbacks that have been with their team for eight years now, and three of them won a Super Bowl, and the other one was Matt Ryan. Like, it was in a Super Bowl. Carr hasn't even been to a playoff game. I know they got to the playoffs when he got hurt, but he hasn't played in one, and it's one out of 7 years. So it's going to be interesting in the musical chairs that go on the quarterbacks around the league. I think you saw the 49ers came out today, or one of their beat reports said that it's likely that Garoppolo's back now because they were going after Stafford. But the asking price is high. If a team called and offered two first rounders for Derek Carr,
take it now.
And all first rounders aren't created equally. And a top 10 first rounder is much different than the 25th pick in the first round. If they could get two first rounders and one of them, you know, in the top 10 or 12, that's something they should consider, but we'll see. It's going to be tough. Thankfully, Matt Stafford did not end up in Denver, because that would have been bad news for the Raiders to have to face Stafford, Herbert, and Mahomes six times a year. So we'll see. But I really don't know what the love affair is with Derek Carr. We're all Raiders fans, but he kind of has a cult following for some reason that I just can't follow. And I know a lot of the younger generations that weren't around when Gannon was the quarterback in you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, they haven't known good quarterback play. So they're looking at it kind of in a smaller time capsule of over a 10 or 15-year period. Yeah, he's the best quarterback they've had, but that doesn't mean anything. We shouldn't just keep him because he's the best quarterback they've had in the last 10 or 15 years. The ultimate goal is to win the Super Bowl. And when you see teams like the Rams, and I know that they have Aaron Donald, they got Jalen Ramsey, they have some generational talent on that team, they said, you know what, Jared Goff's not good enough. We don't care what his contract is. We're going to upgrade the position. And they did what they had to do. I give McVay a lot of credit for that, for having the balls to do that and saying, you know what, I'm the head coach of this team. I'm only going to be the head coach for a few more years if we don't win, so I'm going to do everything I can to win. And if it works, great. If it doesn't, at least they tried. There's nothing worse than staying in the middle of the pack and not doing anything and trying to get better. At the end of the day, the goal is to win a Super Bowl. It's not to go 8-8 or 9-7.
I think it was Ian Rappaport said that the reason why that Jared Goff was shipped because McVay didn't see him as a franchise quarterback anymore. He said the moment that he didn't see him as that franchise quarterback, he was gone. That's the kind of decisiveness that you want in a head coach. And it brings me to the question about John Gruden. If we set Carr aside for a second, John Gruden has had ample time to remake this roster, and the holes on defense and the lack of creativity on offense speaks to him. Mike Mayock said it best. John Gruden's the one who pretty much calls the shots on this team. At what point does Gruden look in the mirror? You said that this is a make or break, but for the totality of his contract, what point with, I think he has, 6 years left? After this year, he has 6 years.
Seven. He's only been there three.
True. He has 7 years left, and at what point do you think or do you feel that Gruden will start looking at the door, like, if things continue to go down this path?
I think we're a long way from that. I think we're at least 3 to 4 years away from that. He's going to want to get Gus Bradley in there, get that system. He's going to give it a couple of years. You're going to have at least one more, maybe 2 years with Carr, and if they do bring in another quarterback, he's going to want to try to develop them. So I could see it easily another 3 to 4 years before he really looks in the mirror and says, you know what, do I still want to do this? I have 3 years left in my contract. So I think he's going to be making the calls for at least the next 3 to 4 years. I could definitely see a situation where Mike Mayock, if things go south again next year, a couple bad free agent signings, the draft class from 2020 doesn't perform, 2021 comes in without immediate impact, I could easily see Gruden passing the buck to Mayock and going out and hiring another guy. And he could just turn around and say, hey, look, we had 5 first-round picks, 6 if you count this year. We're not getting production out of those guys. You know, some of them aren't getting second contracts, and he may just push all the blame onto Mayock. Right or wrong, that's going to happen. Sooner or later, the next guy to fall is going to be Mayock. It's not going to be Gruden.
I agree. Do you think that John Gruden's second tenure has tarnished his legacy?
I don't know about tarnished his legacy. We'll see at the end of this. I mean, I don't think it's off to a rousing start, you know, for the excitement that Raider fans, myself included, I was around for the first one. And expected big things when he came aboard. The one thing that I think that we don't look at properly is it was a complete rebuild other than Carr. He basically came in and gutted the roster. But the decisions he's made to try to build this back up over the last 2 years after he gutted the roster haven't been great. So we'll see what happens in the long run. He's had some hits. You know, Darren Waller. Imagine where this team is if they don't sign Darren Waller off the Ravens practice squad. And you know, for the one or two hits, Max Crosby ended up being hurt a lot, it looks like, during the season, so he might get a pass there. But it's going to come down to what they do next year, I think, for the future of Carr, and probably the next 3 years when we're talking about the future of Gruden with the Raiders.
Henry Ruggs tweeted out, he was asked to give a quote about if he had to grade his rookie season, and he said it was a D-. No, man's honest. When you look at 2021 and you see the clamor for the Raiders signing, either re-signing Nelson Aguilar or signing another wide receiver, where do you think Ruggs will fit into the eventual plans this year of this team?
Well, ideally they don't. Ideally they don't go out and spend that money there. They spend it on defense. And you heard Mayock say, we don't have a difference maker on defense. And we've been saying that on this podcast for the whole season, that they don't have a difference maker. So they have to do whatever they can to get a defense maker on defense. As far as the wide receiver core, I think they're okay. Like, if you have Ruggs as your, if you have Waller is by far the number one option in this passing game. So on Twitter, you see all these Raider fans going, oh, the receivers suck. It's Edwards, Ruggs, and Renfro. But they don't mention Waller for some reason. So if you throw Waller in as one, can Ruggs fit in as the number two? Yeah, possibly next year. I could see that. And then obviously Renfro slides into the slot. Edwards. Between Edwards and Ruggs, you should be able to get production of at least the number two wide receiver out of those guys next year. Whether that's 45 catches for Ruggs and 35 or 40 for Edwards, if it's 60 for Edwards and 35 for Ruggs, whatever the combination is, you should, out of those two guys, should be able to get produced number two wide receiver numbers alongside Waller and then Renfro. But like I said, if they do add an addition, I would like a bigger body guy that can run those slants, can be effective in the red zone, run some fades, because that's the difference. This team has to score touchdowns in the red zone. If they don't, we're going to see a repeat of this year. So,
who's one under-the-radar draft prospect that we should be looking at?
This is going to sound weird, but I really like Tylan Wallace out of Oklahoma State. And I just said they need to go get a bigger wide receiver, and the guy's 6'1", 190. But I like that guy a lot. He's physical. He's tough. He can make catches in traffic. He has good hands. A good separation. I just see that guy and I'm like, this guy in this wide receiver class is going to go somewhere late second to mid third, somewhere in there, and this guy's going to be a really good NFL wide receiver for a long time. Do I think the Raiders should roll the dice to take him? I don't think he's going to come in and be fit in right away, but I could see that guy having a long productive NFL career. For some reason that name just popped in my head. He's a guy that I've always liked.
He is definitely interesting because he's played in that pass-friendly offense and still would for a very long time. Now, if people want to interact with you via social media, how would they?
They can find me on Twitter. The handle is at rholm22. It's RHOLM22. And they can see a lot of the breakdowns from the season. And as we get closer to the draft, I'll put out some stuff. I should at some point next week have a post. I'm going to do a mock draft for the entire first round post Senior Bowl. So I'll try to get that up at some point this week.
One of the best out there, Ryan Hope. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast.
Thank you.
This has been an episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. Please be good to yourselves and be good to each other. Good night.